Welcome back to Movie Trailer Review. This is Ro and Joy, and we're here to come and talk to you about Starz's new show, P-Valley. I'm sure by now some of you have probably seen at least the first episode, and if not, why not? Joy, how did you first hear about P-Valley?
I gotta start with, down in the valley when the girls get naked. Y'all gonna hear the intro when the review drops.
No. I mean, I'm pretty sure we all did the same thing when this happened. Down in the valley where the girls get naked. If you're throwing bands, then you know she. By then, I was saying, I'm gonna need the soundtrack. I don't know what world you live in that you turn a show on Starz, even knowing that it's supposed to be about a strip club in the Delta, and get true trap music to start things off. I mean, it's neon-filled trap music, especially when you have to say, that song is called Down in the Valley by Juicy Fruit, J-U-C-E-E-F-R-O-O-T. Joy, how you feeling about P-Valley?
Well, first of all, Juicy Fruit, the artist, is spelled the way God intended it, in my personal opinion. That's one. Two, I think P-Valley is fantastic. I think this is probably one of the most exciting first season series out right now, which says a lot because we got a lot of television going on even during the pandemic. Man, this is the energy that I desire. When we give Black women the opportunity to really tell layered, nuanced, messy, hilarious stories, they do a fantastic job. I think Katori Hall really knocked it out of the park as the visionary behind this. And she has brought together a fantastic team, a fantastic costume designer, a fantastic soundtrack producer, like everything across the board, I just think works very, very well.
Agreed. For those who don't know, Katori Hall is an Olivier Award-winning playwright from Memphis, Tennessee. So that down-home Delta feel, backwoods Southern feel, and backwoods, I mean, with all the glory and love that is distinctly possible to go for miles and miles before you see one house to another, home feel of a setting. And P-Valley, full name Pussy Valley, started out as a play, and she wrote a book called The Tina Turner Musical, which allegedly was supposed to date Broadway in fall of 2019. So she's got this ability to take a room and turn it into a world. So get all ideas outside of your head that P-Valley is just going to be some form of high-class players club, because that does everything that this show is a disservice.
Oh, absolutely. I think there is a difference in terms of, and we're seeing more of it. Like, what do you do when you have sex positive sex worker stories told from women? Because that was not necessarily an opportunity afforded to us often. And particularly from a Black woman lens, right? And this is a damn near all Black cast. So this...
It's also a damn near all female directing cast.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. All of the directors for all 8 episodes are women. And that is fantastic. And you feel it. It gives you the... Look, they don't make any secret that these women are Olympic-level athletes. Because that's what the fuck strippers are, dog. Like, they have a skill set that is often talked about but can't be duplicated. It is incredible to see. And they don't make any secret in terms of the eye and how the camera tracks them that these are women who are primarily using their bodies to make money. But it never feels voyeuristic, and it doesn't feel gross. And they give these women the respect they deserve as athletes, as complex characters who are trying to make it in Pussy Valley. Like, it's just so well done across the board. I, you know, bisexual lighting galore, a lot of pinks and blues and purples.
As it should be.
Okay.
But see, and I mean, think about this. When do you get life with people who strip for a living or engaged in any level of sex work through the female gaze. And it's not just about, do they get to have nuanced stories? Do you get to figure out the why, the wherefore? Or is it always just a layer before you're waiting on the man behind the woman who's the reason she's on the pole? And Katori Hall built and put together a team of women where this story was about the women who walked through the doors of the pink for work and to further their lives. They're not just strippers. They strip for a living. They have lives. They have goals. They have feelings. They have problems. And it's an 8 1-hour episode. And we've already seen the first four, y'all. So when we say we are invested in P-Valley, we are invested in P-Valley. And I don't really know. I thought it was a lot. I thought the first episode kind of reeled you in, gave you some of the things and the taste of what you were expecting for a show that was centered out of a strip club, because it's not centered around the strip club, it's centered out of the strip club. So you meet the women who work here. You've got Mercedes, who's the OG, and you've got Uncle Clifford, who is truly the head bitch in charge. He also is the owner of Pink. You've got Autumn, who's the new girl. You've got Mississippi, who is literally glorious beauty on a strip pole in motion. And I am still stunned to believe that this is Shannon Thornton's first concrete role. You've got Gidget, who, you know, let's be real, she's a white girl. You've got Lil Murder, who, you know, anybody who knows anything about Southern strip culture, if you are a rapper and you're trying to get put on, if your music doesn't make the girls want to dance, it's never going to make the radio. And you've got Andre Watkins, who is this mysterious man who's in town doing a job for a client that, and nothing really seems like it's above board. So already you've got a female dominated staff. Of course, then you've got, you know, Patrice. Joy, how would you describe Patrice? Because I don't have any kind words for Patrice. Do you?
Trifling. That would be my word for Patrice. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't want to spoil it. Here's what I will say about Patrice. Katori Hall has a lot of different concepts going on in this show, mm-hmm. and in certain moments in the lead up in the first couple of episodes, it feels a little weighted. I think it gets its proper aeration by episode four, but you got strip clubs, you got money saving, you got the church, you got gentrification, you got queer love stories, you got light skin foolishness, you got it all. You truly do. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe it in all seriousness. I just think that the show is very much one of a kind.
But then you forgot one thing. You also have a mystery that's threading throughout all of this other stuff of what's happening in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with Autumn?
Yeah. Oh, yes. That was subconsciously attached to the light skin foolishness, but agreed. The mystery was there. Yeah. And the intrigue is there for sure. But yeah, it is, wow, like a lot of things and a lot of themes that are a part of it. And I will, you know, in all candor, I do think episode 2 and 3 is when it gets a little muddly. We get some air across these different themes in episode 4. There is absolutely a moment where it really, really comes to a head in episode 4. But, you know, without nothing outside of that minor critique, it is never not engaging.
Yeah.
Never not interesting.
I do think they tried to do too much story and world building combined between episodes 2 and 3. And they kind of lost what I thought was a phenomenal pace set up in episode 1. So episode 2 is kind of a slowdown, which, if you're the kind of person who doesn't necessarily like to pay attention, could be a letdown. Because each episode ends on a soft cliffhanger. And when you come back into it, you get a very smart 1 minute, y'all need to be paying attention, from Clifford to wrap you back into the game. But as a Southern girl, to have something that's coming out of the South that truly has the sensibilities of the South and the cultural markers of the South, and you like you were saying before, you've got the intersection of the church and nightlife. I'm Catholic, but I'm still Black, so we may not have a traditional usher board, but we still had an usher board. So, you know, people are like, mm-hmm, you could be out all night, but you couldn't come in here and give your proper tithes and offering to the Lord. Okay.
we see how you are.
But you still get those moments where you have kind of what's really motivating you and what's really the hustle and all the different ways there was a hustle. Now, I didn't name everybody who's in the show, but I would like to tell you that the mayor of this town is played by someone who's appropriately trash.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd be happy to see him on my screen ever again. But he's cast properly because I don't like him. I don't respect him. And I'm really hoping he ends up in a ditch face down somewhere.
Man, he looked like a Negro Colonel Sanders in some of these outfits. I'm not joking with you. Like, some of these outfits, I was sitting there like, oh, my God.
This but he think great. He dealt to smooth, so.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah. So you do have to keep in mind, to my sensibilities, I feel like her stage production experience, Katori brought that and used it really well in the show. But it's just, it kind of starts out a little confusing. But I think I was talking with Chris on, if you're a premium member, you're going to soon be hearing a review that we did of The Villainess. And we were talking about the necessity of not hand-holding and the necessity of the director trusting her audience to pay attention and come along for the ride. And Katori Hall is most assuredly expecting you to come into the world. So it's an opportunity for you to look at patriarchy in a new way and to not always be looking for what's the catch, you know. But there are catches all over the place. So when you start realizing that the OG is planning to retire, and that's not a spoiler, it's in the trailer, it's in all the teaser information. She's ambitious and she's a boss. And she's also one of the strippers that you watch her strip and you're like, she's so aggressive. And that's not really a complaint, but she's so aggressive. Joy. The death drops. The mall.
Man, the way, yo. All, like, when I tell you multiple times, me and Ro text each other, was like, is she gonna die? Like, it was so much. We were both like, no, she's doing a lot. She needs to relax.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm tired. I can't. So she's played by Brandi Evans, who doesn't look a day close to her actual age. And this really is kind of a whole lot of, I'm pretty sure I know her face, but I may not remember where I know her from casting, which I thought was great because it gives you kind of a fresh angle without tying these faces to really known quantities and entities. And Mercedes is she's Clifford's bottom bitch in the club. When it comes to what they do and how they keep the doors open, Mercedes is a money maker, and she's ready to be done. She's got other dreams, she's got other ambitions, she's got a past that she hasn't really dealt with in the same town that she's still living in, and she's ready to go. So you start out the series knowing that the headliner is about to leave, and then soon you meet a girl who just kind of seems like she wanders into town, and when you see what she does to get into the club, you will have such joy. Now, I'm not gonna lie, Katori Hall plays directly into colorism with the dynamic she sets up between Autumn Knight's character and Mercedes. Would you disagree, Joy?
I would not disagree, which is why I said light skin foolishness, because that is something that Brandi Evans' character, Mercedes, would absolutely say. She, Autumn, there is a clear delineation between the feelings and the emotions of being a darker skinned woman, but being a headliner in the strip club. And candidly, the fairer skinned girl who does not have skills. Let's be honest.
She can't dance. Not a single skill.
She can't dance for shit. Still getting the eye and the glance from the patrons. So Mercedes being Mercedes, separate from her being a dark skinned woman, just her as a character, she bit her. She hated her. Absolutely is a hater. And so but I appreciate that they're very upfront about that, because I do think that that would be very realistic to scale if Pink was a legitimate strip club.
Oh, yeah. Okay, look, I just rewatched the own series, Light Girls and Dark Girls, and there's a lot of truth to be had into that. Sometimes it be your own who be on your back and hating you and causing you problems. And Pink puts that in a perspective that doesn't usually get used on TV. The very commonplace acceptance of certain stereotypes about light-skinned girls versus dark-skinned girls. The one point where she said all she needed to do is pretty and lay there. But they also turn around and they kind of subvert those stereotypes, because they've cast Autumn as a girl who you're not really sure what's going on with her, but you're sure almost all of it's grimy. And you start at certain aspects, you get flashes from her past, and you're like, am I supposed to feel bad for her? Am I supposed to be worried about her? But then everything that she's doing affirmatively, you're like, you know what? I don't like Autumn. I don't trust Autumn. I kind of want to punch Autumn in her face. And I understand why Mercedes always walking around here looking hateful. She's a new girl. She already in here acting like she about to be the baddest, the best. When quite frankly, Mercedes needs to be real happy that Miss Mississippi has a confidence problem.
Oh, I got to do this. M.I. Crooked letter, crooked letter. Uh-huh. Oh my God. hump that. Yeah, they listen. And that name is appropriate because Mama is an aerial stunner. Okay. She does what she has to do. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. She's magical. Now, it's my understanding that the ladies who fly in P-Valley are actually from Atlanta, from the Atlanta talent pool, or at least they brought in people from the talent pool to teach people how to fly. And there's a moment in this show where it's exactly what Joy was saying. You get the real sense that this is an athletic ability, that this isn't just something that anybody gets up on the pole and do. And the way they show that and it turns into a knuck if you buck moment in the strip club is so deeply joyful for me, y'all. I can't wait till you get there and you see it. But
it's very well done. By the way, Brandi Evans is a professional dancer. She's done tour and choreography for people like Monica, a lot of R&B folks. She can dance as well. She's a very talented dancer. Because there were I'm positive they definitely have stunt doubles in certain places, but there were definitely some scenes where I was like, oh no, Brandy's doing this. And if you follow her on Instagram, she was showing some video of her doing like glamour shots for the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, that's her. That's fully her.
I'm pretty sure Skylar Joy, who's Gidget, is also doing some of her own work. And that little white girl got skills. She's made a Gumby material across the spinal area the way she likes to slide around the pole. But, sorry, I like strippers. I get a little fixated. But beyond that, the simple fact that that's just the surface, that under each layer, there's something real about each one of these women. There's something real about Clifford besides Clifford being... How are we describing
Clifford? I think that's appropriate to scale. Yeah. Well, Clifford just, or we can call Clifford what he is, which is a bad bitch. He's just a bad bitch.
Yeah, Clifford is a bad bitch. He's super, super, super gender fluid. He's always on a hustle. And if anybody's heart in here is made of hooker gold, it's Clifford. So he's a strip club owner, and they have rules. And Clifford has an outfit and an ability to beat his face. So the gods celebrate and give him new jewels for his nails. But behind is a cunning and a thought. I know you in the costuming, girl. I know this show got you on the costuming.
Oh, the costume. Truly a gem. Like, I don't know how else to describe it, but like the costumes every time. There's one costume in particular, and I'm not going to spoil because I just think it needs to be experienced live when it happens.
The antebellum and of it all.
Yes. Oh my God. I physically died. I said, hold up, wait a minute. Y'all not going to do this to me right now. It was just a pleasant surprise. Cause you're just sitting there like, what? And the funny part is that he had the antebellum costume on a plantation. I'm not going to explain why he's on a plantation. When you get there, you're going to be like, why is he here?
I know. I mean, strip clubs are a part of the culture down south. I've seen a lot of articles and people are talking about the humanization of sex work and, you know, destigmatizing strippers. Strip club culture already exists, and it's not something that necessarily has to exist outside of what's the regular culture in the South. It's like, so, you know, there are lots of places that you used to be able to go, possibly less now, I haven't been home in a while, where it's dead in the daytime, but at night, the area is jumping. And
oh, yes, lit.
It's all illegal clubs, or it's just clubs, and that's the club district, and there's no reason to be there during the day, and if you are there during the day, I got questions if you don't work there. And so to open the doors to a juke joint looking, takes all comers, definitely has a food truck off the side. Why are you letting the strippers eat the wings before they gotta go to work? How old is our DJ? Because I really want to, I want to card him. We stan a soldier bouncer because Joy and I are firmly Team Diamond.
Diamond Hive all day. The way he takes care, like, not only does he don't be fooling with the girls he don't like, but the ones that he do, he be taking care of them, and he's never, in any of the episodes we've seen, I hope, and I sincerely hope it doesn't change. He loves the girls. He respects them. He don't be bothering them. He don't be hitting on them. Now he, there's one that he fancies, but he would kill for her.
That's a little different. Literally. Than just, you know, expecting a freebie from the stripper when you're trying to say, I would like to solve all the problems in your life and be your dude. That's a little different. So Diamond is played by Tyler Lipley, and I would like to order four. I feel that should be something that you should get me for Christmas. But he's strong, he's silent, and he's snarky, but I mean, he's clearly got some PTSD.
Yeah, he's not all the way there, but you know.
But the ways in which he's not there are very useful for his job. You know, when he can pop up out of nowhere like Superman, because he got you about to be a problem in my club radar. So.
Oh yeah, he's very quickly be like, and he, it don't matter who you are, woman, man, non-binary. They're like, he's like, you don't want the smoke. He will beat everybody. Yeah. He don't care.
He's like. I don't know anybody who's not VIP. It's just, it's such a beautiful just moment in time. But you do have to remember, this is on Starz, so there may be moments of full frontal nudity. But the lighting is always beautiful. The casting seems to be perfect. The timing could use a little work. But before it's all said and done, through episodes 1 to 4, you have one full story arc that the most development and the character that seems to come to the forefront most is Mercedes and her trife mother, Patrice Woodbine. And the dynamic between them plays on ideas of family, turning your back on family, hard choices, trust, betrayal, and that's where you get the cross section between strip culture and the church. It's also where you get the idea of, even if you want better, having a little bit of a problem letting go of the notoriety and the fame of what you've already got. Because I've never seen somebody be smarter and let guilt make them make more stupid decision than Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes, man. You know, on a skill set standpoint, I'm give her a 10 out of 10 on a decision making standpoint. It's negative. -5.
I still keep her at about a 4, but that's only because I think she started ahead of the game. So man, that's the only thing that kept her from falling into the negative. But I'm pretty sure, depending on what happens by episode 5, she's gonna be all out of points, because she's already definitely all out of favor.
Oh, I'm over her. Let's be clear. Like, I genuinely get the issue, but I think it's the bark and bite scenario where it's just like, girl.
Yeah. I mean, because on the one hand, she's very confident. She's very comfortable. She's very aware of her status as queen of the pink. But she also recognizes that there's only but so long that you can do that job and have no fallback plan, you know?
And even in her cruelness, which, let's be clear, she's cruel. Even in her cruelness, she does impart wisdom to the girls in a way that is helpful when they need it. You know what I mean? She'll do that for them and be like, yo, you haven't been saving up. You should be saving up. All these other things. And I will say that is, it's good, it's sound advice, but she does it and the execution is terrible. Like, it just,
she doesn't take her own advice. Like, she's always saying, you need to listen to your intuition, you need to pay attention. She got good hustle, but she's a bad gangster.
Yeah, you know? That's really what it is. And the fact that her mama is hustling her out is crazy, and the way she's doing it.
Let's be real. We know good and damn well every single thing that Mercedes knows about hustling that she didn't learn from Uncle Clifford. She got at home from Patrice.
Oh, she learned from her mama. For sure. For sure.
Patrice gave me so many flashbacks to certain personality traits that exist in my own family. I wanted to fight the air. But that's also where you get those elements of, like, a whole different kind of patriarchy. Patrice up in the church and she's trying to progress, and she's, you know, she's in an evangelical church, so there's a certain understanding of what a woman's place is and what a woman is allowed to do and permitted to do. This is one of those shows that shoves you directly into the way people think about things and how they talk. Like a lot of men, they like to say, I have to get used to, I have to let it be that woman is in power, not I have to acknowledge this woman's power. I have to recognize that I'm not in control. They use words like let. They use words like allow. Even if they feel that you've earned a level, then they have to evaluate whether or not it's your place to be there. And so Patrice is on a whole different kind of journey that's almost parallel to her daughter's, because they're both on the hunt for respectability.
Mm-hmm.
They both feel like they need to take a pivot to what's supposed to be their career. And the obstacles in their way should be navigable. And Patrice is not afraid of using her daughter and stepping all over her daughter to position herself where she needs to, because she ain't nothing but an old school manipulative hoe.
Mm-hmm.
And Mercedes thinks that she's doing better. But like a lot of mothers, Patrice was very careful to leave her daughter with an intact sense of matrilineal obligation. So she could always go back to that well and throw out some guilt. She can always go and press those buttons that she indoctrinated her child with to get what she wants from her child in order to turn around to try to go get what she thinks she needs. And to watch that play out and how that dynamic develops and how it impacts Pink and the greater effect it has on giving us a doorway through which to view the efforts of gentrification and who's trying to control them and who's trying to get put on before it's too late. You know, it was an interesting doorway to go through, even if what you really wanted to do was Patrice in a hole face down and throw dirt on her back and leave her there.
Oh my God.
With some lie. And just
not some lie.
You heard what I said. She's the kind of person make you thinking about felonies. The kind of, you know, I don't know where she went. I mean, I ain't seen
her. Hey, friend, I don't disagree, but.
She's a fictional character. We could talk about saying she need to go. I'm not talking about a real
woman. I'm not upset. I'm not upset about that. It was just like the law took me out. I was like, okay.
Okay. Welcome to the row who's usually talking to Chris, apparently.
Harry, I'm not against it. It was just like, wait, lie? What?
I mean, evidence.
Oh, God.
Go to jail. What you talking about?
She is trifling, though. I hate Patrice. I'm not going to hold you. Yeah, like, I do.
It's played by Harriet DeFoy, and I think that she's doing a brilliant job. I don't know. Do you know anything about her? I feel like I need to look up a cast bio on her. Do they have one? Because she's a particular. No, I don't have a cast bio on Harriet DeFoy. Who is you, Harriet? Who is you?
Who is you, Harriet? Yeah, she gives me, I don't know how to describe it, but like she gives me.
Okay, first of all, this says she was born in 1962, and I'm a little like,
that's wild.
How dare you? Okay, yeah, so she's a hardcore character actress. I have seen her a couple of times. She's been on a couple TV shows. She did an episode of Orange is New Black, but nothing huge. Oh, I know where I know her from. She was a detective on Criminal Intent, one of the Law and Order shows. That's why I recognize that pinched face thing that she does. But yeah, she's just a hardcore character actress, and this is kind of a breakout for her, and I appreciate it, even though I hate her. I mean, that's a sign that you've done your job well, right?
No, she's great. She really is.
I mean, there are so many different kinds of pimps on this show that it's almost a shame to realize exactly, like, okay, everybody's on this anti-capitalism tip right now. And I'm not saying that we don't need to do something about the commodification of everything. But I also think to a certain extent, there's a little bit of freedom in being able to hustle that if it was harnessed properly, would make people unstoppable. And that's where you kind of fall in with Uncle Clifford. It's clear Clifford got game. It's also clear Clifford is tired and making the mistakes of somebody who has allowed themselves to be stressed out and exhausted. Would you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. Clifford also is another person who has who doesn't follow his own advice, has all these rules in terms of not getting messed up by the game, but can't pay his bills.
Right. His priorities are off. You get into a situation where you start talking about ownership of land and legacy And, you know, the gentrification efforts going on in P-Valley are big. And if you know anything about being in the Delta, the prevalence of commercial building has a lot of laws and it's got a lot of rules. And one of the reasons why a lot of people don't see casinos in larger amounts down south the way that you do is because states like Mississippi have rules that say you got to be on a waterway. And people haven't figured out how to properly do more than like riverboat casinos. That's what most people know down south for, right? Riverboat casinos in the Mississippi River and stuff like that. So she picked a really logical way to come at the whole gentrification game. But she did it in a way that also lets you talk about how Black people lose property. You know, if you juxtapose this to Miss Juneteenth and the owner of the bar where Turquoise worked, and he told her, you don't ever, ever give a white man a foothold to take your property. It may not be what you think it should be, but it's 100% mine. And how very much he was anti going through the system for loans. And you find out really quickly, again, not a spoiler because we're not going to tell you how it plays out, Uncle Clifford owes somebody money on the pink. And that has turned into the door that somebody is willing to walk through to take everything Clifford has ever worked for. So, you know, you break your rules. And let's be real, some of the kindness that Clifford is showing to his girls is the reason why Clifford doesn't have money to make his payment.
That's another thing, too. I was like, you don't have to do this. Truly, you don't.
Yeah.
And no shade. He loves his girls, but like, I was just in there like, I don't want to spoil, but like, girl, you were being dumb. That was your fault.
I wouldn't have told Mercedes shit. Let me just say that. Uh-huh. I wouldn't have told Mercedes a damn thing.
she would have told me that story of what happened to her money. I would have been like, that's crazy.
Right. Or there's a moment in here. All right, girl, good luck. There's a moment in here where Clifford was like, next time, cheat me. And I'm like, no. Next time, lag to come pay me. But bring me my money. But all of this is wrapped around trying to figure out what's going on with this chameleon-like girl played by Alerica Johnson, who's known as Autumn. She's the light-skinned girl who seems like she has some polish. I guess we'll use that word. We'll call it polish.
Yeah.
Because she's still grimy and ratchet. I mean, let's be real. She's still trifling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you've got that girl who comes in and someone asks something and, you know, they don't know how to pronounce the word, Autumn is that girl who knows to say it's Yves Saint Laurent with the appropriate accent. And she keeps giving herself away that something's going on with her. But she also has severe PTSD. She's clearly on the run from someone with her bougie ass. And so she's kind of cast as the femme fatale because everything that you get is not only given to you with a stage play flair, it's bringing fiction noir characters and film noir aesthetic to the screen in a way that I've never seen done before talking about anything centering Black people. Have you?
No, I haven't. I would agree with you on that wholeheartedly. It gives her this level of mystery and intrigue. They also do some really interesting thing with flashbacks. They only reveal a little bit by bit, in a way that keeps you engaged and reminds you, like, oh, Autumn is full of shit. But also, like, keeps you at least, when her shenanigans are happening, you're like, okay, I can at least stick it out because I know something big is coming. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But everybody speaks in a way that you would mostly expect them to speak coming from the Delta region. And it's refreshing. So if you're one of those people who can't deal with folks who don't talk the way that you expect them to, you're going to be annoyed. You're going to feel like you need to tell people how to pronounce things, and you're going to get called bougie before you get through the first episode. So just deal with your life. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Okay. They're just the way that they use language on this show in particular, I think, is not only is it extremely authentic, but it's gorgeous. Yes. And funny.
Yes. Yes, when you can blend someone's gift of intuition with the innate ability to read folks for filth.
Uncle Clifford in particular.
Yes.
Truly a joy.
But also Patrice.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
yes.
Patrice has that holy roller skill set that folks don't really know what to do. You know, there are moments in the show where I know that some of my friends who don't necessarily navigate Southern culture very well, I'll be like, I'm gonna need some subtitles. And I mean, turn them on, it's fine. I'm gonna mock you, but turn them on. I don't want you to miss anything. the conversations are dynamic. The interactions are dynamic. Everything develops the characters. And just as soon as you think that things have slowed around too much, there's dancing. There's beautiful, glorious dancing. And by dancing, I mean they're on a stripper pole. So you've got flyers. You've got a what? How old is the DJ? Because he don't look like he's met 20 yet.
He has to be. I thought he was in high school.
I thought he was in high school, but I don't know.
No, because remember, there's one scene where he didn't get picked up from high school in one scene?
I thought it was a high school, but honestly, there's so many different kinds of school down south where you're not too sure how old everybody who go to them is, and they've got academies. So he feels like he's in high school. He act like he's in high school. He looked like he barely in high school. So I'm like, this child, this 18-year-old maybe child, first of all, for the character they developed for him, for the DJ, as an entry point to be able to talk about the music that's coming out of the strip club and the influence that strip clubs have on the wider community for sound. I thought that was really smart and brilliant because it nicely dovetails in with another storyline that you also get, Mercedes with Lil Murder, played by J. Alphonse Nicholson. And I would just like to say that I would like to applaud J. Alphonse Nicholson for fully investing in his character in a way that Will Smith never was able to do when he had to play gay.
Yeah, I believe him. I'm here. I'm present. Like, I was like, nope, you are invested in this role and I applaud you, sir.
And he's like so many people I know from back home. You may, if you've seen Just Mercy, you may recognize him from Just Mercy. He was in that. He was Henry Davis. He was Darnell in Luke Cage. Yep. So, I mean, he was on Mr. Robot season 2. He's a very, very, okay, if you saw the tragedy that is Madam C.J. Walker, he's the husk, low-down, no-account husk, John Robinson. But he's playing a really difficultly nuanced character, and difficult because it flies in the face of concepts of masculinity and what that's supposed to mean about what you want. You know, his charm is rough, but he's clearly intelligent. He's got questionable skills and even more questionable taste in beats, but he has ambition. He's hilarious. And just as soon as you think that he's just a little too soft to survive, he'll remind you that he'll beat the entire, like, black off of you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. He's one of those people that, you know, he has a lot of drive and ambition, and people clown him because he's a goofy dude. But yeah, he'll snap in random moments that's not worth snapping for, and you just be like, okay, relax, relax, relax. This is too much.
I was like, I'm going to need you to calm down, bruh. But yeah, all of it is just nuanced and really done. It's like any two time that you realize that you've got a story that's kind of, you know, you're having a conversation between people under the bridge and they're healthy relationships. Like, the way that he deals with people is above board. He'll lie before God get the news, but he is very upfront and above board, you know, in a way that you don't usually get. And so when you start to realize that there's also this element to his identity sexually and his identity as a rapper and who he sees himself, and then you tie all this into the fact that he's searching for a stage, he's searching for a way to get put on, that opens him up to some questionable decisions and trifling behavior.
Oh, trifling. He's so trifling. Anyway, I literally, we can go on and on in the minute details, but honestly, this is a show. This is a show. Television. I feel like the gif of Saoirse Ronan in Little Women, and it just says women, and it's just like that. That's me. It's just like P-Valley. Like, this is a show. It's fantastic. No, it is such a wonderfully thoughtful series. Katori Hall, baby.
Yeah,
come on. Come with it. This stars needed this.
Yes, I'm telling you.
Because I know they were probably nervous. Yeah, they were probably really nervous about a post-power programming. This is it.
Yeah, this was a savvy move. I mean, okay, P-Valley is where code switching comes to live. I mean, every level of this show is about the biculture nature of black life, and this is code switching in action. Even the cut scenes away from where Mercedes is at work versus Mercedes in her regular life, Autumn at night versus Autumn during the day, Clifford when Clifford needs to go mingle among, you know, the normals versus Clifford in the glory, Mercedes dealing with her mom versus Mercedes with her girl Mississippi and Gidget, and then you have the elements that we didn't talk about in this show, which are built around Andre, and you know the hometown boy looking to leave his stamp and what he thinks. It's a whole savior narrative that you just know is going to go completely wrong before the end of the day. And then again, just remember, when all is said and done, we are absolutely and forever Team Diamond. Thank you for joining us on Movie Trailer Reviews. This is our first half talk of P-Valley. Trust and believe, we will be back.